Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah. Yeah. Good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, TGIF, to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Hope you all are well and staying well and making sure that your family and friends are well this month. Well, you know, we're focusing on a variety of topics this month. Still got COVID to contend with, but also Domestic Violence Awareness Month, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and some other things. So we have had someone on to share their experience with breast cancer, but now we want to have someone on to share their experience with domestic violence. And I've known this woman for a long time, and the sad part about it is I didn't know her at the time that these incidents were actually going on, but these incidents are still very much a part of her life and haunt her. And she's going to share her experience today. We want to welcome Dr. Ada Crosby to the show. Good morning, Dr. Ada. How are you doing?
I'm great. And good morning, everyone. And thank you for joining us today for this discussion.
I was thinking today, I was like, I can't believe it's been about 25 years that we've known each other.
You know? Yeah.
When I was working with the diocese. You know, and time flies, and we don't, unfortunately, get a chance to keep up with each other that much, but I'm glad we have continued to stay in touch. But I do, one thing I do know is that this happened before you and I even met, and it's still very much a part of your life, and I appreciate you sharing with us today. So the first question that I want to ask you, well, first I want people to, I want you to tell people who you are,
okay.
And then I want to ask you, when was the first incident for you, and were you aware at the time exactly what it was?
Yes. Well, I'm going to introduce myself. I'm Dr. Ada Crosby. I am a mental health counselor, have been for well over 30 years. I can't stop working. So I'm still working. I'm training new hires at Caribbean Community Connection, Inc. in Winter Park. It's a counseling service, and we see a lot of indigent people, a lot of people who actually have experience and are receiving help for domestic violence. Some of them have had their children taken away from them because of the violence, because it not only affects the victim, but it affects family members as well, especially children who witness these horrible incidents. I have been told many times that it's impossible for somebody educated as I have been. In fact, I had my master's degree. When I met my husband-to-be, I was finishing up my master's in clinical psychology. And it's interesting because I had to learn that it's not about intellect. It's more about emotional intelligence. And that I didn't pick up on until many years later when emotional intelligence became key in relationships. Because if a person is brilliant, he's probably still, or she can still be very violent and commit acts of violence. perhaps a person is more into, emotionally intelligent, they are less likely to commit acts of violence against another person. It's just not in them to do that. So I was asked that question at one time, and I, the answer I gave was that intelligence has nothing to do with love. You just love. And that's how I grew up, loving people, and I love. I love, as I tell people all the time, I love hard, I work hard, and I play hard. All right. So
well,
my first incident.
Play hard thing too, which is important.
Yes, I do. I do. I play hard. Yes. Yeah. I went to a retirement party about 2 weeks ago, and I was probably the life of the party. I was getting everybody to dance, and you know, I thank God for this because that's probably the link to getting me through the horrors that I'm going to tell you about. I won't tell you about everything. We don't have enough time. That's coming out in the book. Surely it absorbed a lot of my life, but I don't have any regrets. I know now that it was my assignment from God, and it's up to me to do something with it. And I'll tell you at the end of this about the nonprofit that I started about domestic violence. My first incident, it will be with my ex. I was one of those people who was a bookworm. I loved to read, and I just loved to read. So when I was in high school, I really didn't date. I didn't date. I think it was part of me that wanted to develop me as a person first. And I think I did a pretty good job. Some of my friends were getting pregnant and not getting to go to college and what have you. I couldn't wait to get to college. But, wow, was I in a shock. Truly, some of the same stuff going on today has gotten a lot worse, like with date rape and what have you. But the focus is going to be more on the individual that I met that I feel like was way out of my league. And in terms of street knowledge, perhaps, but I met what I will refer to now as my children's father. I guess I don't like the word ex because I'm trying to get rid of all the negative associations with him because that doesn't help me. But my children's father is from New York. He's still living as far as I know. And he was very street smart. I came from a little town in Mississippi. And not very street smart at all. And I'm what you call a sapiosexual, meaning I love smart men. I do. I'm attracted to them. And because of his street smarts and the fact that he was a pretty brilliant guy too, mixed ancestry, he is part Pakistani and part African-American. More or less fell in love with him without really knowing the deeper meaning of love. Because I questioned myself later after the violence started that what was I in love with? So this is where you become more in line with who you are as a person, as an individual. And at one point in time, I thought, I wish my mother had told me about men like him. But frankly, my mother could have never told me anything. There were no warning signs, except as it got worse, I learned that this is not appropriate. Based on how I grew up with a mother and father, and they had arguments, but I never experienced violence with my parents. So this is totally unlike me. So it started off really bad. It started off, he was supposed to be a narc. He would have money all the time, and he would often leave, if you want to call it dating, it really wasn't dating. It was on whenever we could get together and go out and do things, but it was very controlling from the very beginning. And that's one of the aspects of domestic violence. It's not about love ever, first of all. It's all about control. That's it. and he controlled me lock, stock, and barrel. He did. He would follow me around. I would go places, and he would say, why were you over that way? And I was like, okay, I was very free before I met you. I have friends over there, and I was hanging out with them. Coming from work, he would follow me from my job at Sears back to where I live. And then things just kind of, I don't know the word for it, maybe. It just got overwhelming, perhaps. And I didn't even know I was overwhelmed because I was so excited about graduating. I was looking forward to that. And then what happened is I found out he was living with someone. And that did not resonate well with me at all. So I spoke up, and I was lied to, of course. My children's father is probably the greatest pathological liar. And then many years later, I found out I was truly married to a sociopath. Yes, absolutely. Anyway, I was Catholic. I actually was going through classes to become Catholic because I grew up as a Baptist, and I decided I wanted to be Catholic. I had a best friend that was Catholic, and he was an amazing person, and we were friends. He happened to be gay, but we were just best friends. And so back to the control issue, I was very close to the priest of the parish, and he would ask me often, what is this guy that always comes around? And he was the first red flag. He said, he's not for you. He spoke very, very frank. He says, not for you. He's been married before. He has children. You've never been married. You're young. Even though there weren't a lot of difference in years between our ages. However, he was not a good match. But I proceeded anyway because the control he had over me continued. And he continued to see the lady that he was seeing. So when I finally decided to break up with him, I was probably days away from the graduation, and I decided that I would go speak with this brand new social worker professor. Everybody was talking about her. By the way, I'm a graduate of the University of Southern Mississippi. I broke ranks in my family and almost got kicked out of family for going to a traditionally white institution. I didn't go to Jackson State or Corn or any of the other historically black institutions. So, but I survived that too. Anyway, and I'm trying to be funny, guys. So I got a really good counseling with this lady. She was excellent. She made me feel so bad because I felt so rotten because I had spent time with this man who turned out to be a real jerk. So, but that wasn't the end of it. He wanted to get married. And how can you get married and you're already in a relationship with someone else? So he even went and got a marriage license. And I just could not do that. However, when I broke up with him, things really deteriorated to the worst. I was feeling so good at the interview with this professor that he was looking for me, of course. He was looking for me. And he found me on campus, and he said, we need to go for a ride. I was crazy to do that, but I was just feeling so good and so self-confident. We drove to an area where there was dump. It was really a trash dump, and it was way out. I remember asking, why are we going way out here? We got way out there, and he said, we found a lot of dead bodies out here, because, again, he's a police officer, at least for the most part, he was a police officer. But fear is how I married him. He had a .357 Magnum, and he told me if I leave him, he's going to shoot me, then shoot himself. And it was just something really crazy about that I just knew that this guy wasn't playing. I just knew it, and it was just something about what he'd done, what he had in terms of his work, and he was a Vietnam veteran and all this. So I married him, kept it a secret, We went about like we were didn't even know each other. And then I had planned anyway to move to California. So move to California, and he came later. And he was often gone. For some reason, he was leaving. He would come, stay 2 weeks, he would leave. I couldn't find a job. So I just felt really horrible. I really did. And my oldest sister said to me, Ada, I think he's married to someone else. It's unusual. You guys are newlyweds, and he's always gone. And my brother-in-law would be the one to take him to the airport. And he was really concerned about me. But I was so hurt, so embarrassed. I went and talked to a priest. And he said, yeah, you're really not, in a sense, married, because you didn't get married in the church. Of course, I was married. I had a license. But I wasn't married in the Catholic Church, thank God. And I told him about some of the abuse that occurred, the controlling and the pushing at that time. He would push me and, like, dare me in certain ways to act out, total control again. And the fact that he was not present in my life. I joined the Air Force. Yes, I did. I escaped, and I figured I went back to my name. I dropped Francis. His last name was Francis. I was actually hyphenated. And that was an issue with him. He didn't like that. He wanted me to have his whole last name because his first wife still carries his last name. And by the way, she and I became good friends. We are very good friends. She's a retired FBI agent. And so after that, oh, my goodness. It's just so much. But he found me. He found me. And I don't know. I think he had connections. And I'll say this, because throughout the so-called marriage, we really didn't get to know each other. He seemed to know more about controlling me than I knew about him, because I remember one day looking at his passport, and I didn't even have a passport at the time, and I looked at it. It's like Amsterdam and all these other countries, and he snatched it from me. And abuse kept getting worse. I had an assignment in Colorado at an Air Force base because I already had a degree, so I went straight to a job where I work with GS workers. I would go to work with black eyes. And I don't know, I was totally embarrassed, but I lied. Most abused women lie. What happened to you? Oh, I was playing baseball, and I accidentally got hit by the ball. I would just lie. I remember telling somebody something so stupid, now I truly laugh. I said I was looking for something on the floor. I was crawling, and I bumped into the door. I was getting TBIs at a time that I didn't know might affect me later in years. I was always able to have good jobs. But anyway, long story short, I got out of the Air Force. I had an injury. And at that time, women they weren't considered indispensable, so to speak. There were a lot of women in, but the fact is that I felt like with him, I had a liability. In fact, he almost got me kicked out anyway because he found me, and I don't know how he found me, but to this day, I think he had connections with some higher form of authority, perhaps. Because to this day, I don't know what he was doing and who he was with. So we moved to Houston. And I found out I was pregnant with my first child, and I went through a lot of abuse, serious abuse, to the point that he wanted me to have an abortion. He said he wasn't ready to be a parent. Every day was, did you go? Did you call? And he slammed me against the wall. I know he wanted me to lose the baby. He would. He would just slam me. And I couldn't. So I went to Mississippi. I left. And my my father was not doing well, so I came at a time where I could help my mother. But he came, and he pleaded with me to come back to Houston, and I did. I did because I was embarrassed. Here I am, a master's degree, pregnant, no job. So I went back with him, and abuse started again. It just didn't make sense. It's like he just wanted to torment me. And so I made reservations again to go back to Mississippi. I did. And I went into labor the morning I was supposed to leave. So I had the baby in Houston and got home. And he was working, at least I thought he was, but he was working and he was still taking trips and leaving and what have you. And he had a very special friend that became like a brother to me. He knew him when they were in the Air Force. And he was just intrigued with him because one day on the Air Force base, he landed. He's a pilot. My children's father is a pilot. He doesn't fly planes anymore because he got scared after 9/11, he says, because of how he looks. But anyway, he drove up in the plane with Chappie James, General Chappie James. And since that day, he was just amazed because it was something that he did that he didn't know. And they were good friends. And he would come by sometimes, and if I had a beer, I offered Alan a beer, and he'd say, where is he? I said, I don't know, he's gone. And when he came back, you know, no questions asked. I learned to not question him because it wouldn't get me anywhere, maybe another black eye. And then we finally moved to Orlando because a friend of mine I was in graduate school with, she moved to Orlando, and she said, Ada, come to Orlando. So I came to Orlando. And we lived with them for a while. Then we got our own place. And, of course, the abuse increased. It did. I was able to find great jobs. So I got a job at Martin Marietta at the time. In fact, her husband was one of the few black managers there. And they both from Mississippi, and graduates of institutions in Mississippi. So she, to this day, is one of my best friends. And she knows a lot about my history for what I've shared with her. She and I got together one time, and she said, I'm just so concerned about you, Ada. I'm just so concerned. And I told her I'm going to be okay because I was embarrassed. And one thing that women usually do, we hide our stuff. To this day, my family members don't know the level of abuse I went to. I never shared it with them. I never did. And so I worked Martin Marietta, which became a nightmare, and the abuse got worse. He would bother me on the job. He would call, hang up. And at that time I was sharing phones. I worked in logistics, so I was sharing phones with engineers. And one day I gave up. I said, I can't do this anymore. He accosted me in the parking lot. He snatched my badge off and tore the blouse I was wearing. So I was more embarrassed because, again, I had enough pride to know that this is not professional. I'm not going to make it. Majority of women who abuse lose their jobs anyway because of the abuse. They're not able to keep up or whatever. But I told my boss, Mr. John Cutt, I'll never forget him. I said, I give up. And he knew. He knew about the phone calls. He knew I was being He knew I was being followed. He just knew a lot. So whatever my children's father was doing, he was protected. For some reason, he was protected. And to this day, I don't know. So he said, no, don't give in, Ada. Something I want you to do. So I became a fugitive, basically. I went to Oklahoma. He gave me a field assignment, one of the very few assignments that women get. I was working on a Pershing II missile, and he found me. He not only found me, but he went and picked up my son from daycare because he's very cunning. He's very convincing. And I told the daycare workers, they even had paperwork not for him to pick him up. But they said, oh, but he called him daddy. So I was frantic. Of course, I called the police. I work with a guy who dated a lady who was a deputy sheriff, and they really helped me. They really did. I remember when he came on my job, I was walking to the car the very same day that he went to the daycare, picked up my son. How he found that out, I have no idea. I have no idea. But anyway, I was walking to my car, and I ran back into the building, and then my coworkers, which are all male, came out with sticks and brooms. They're going to beat his butt. Yes, yes. Later on, I found out you picked him up. So I went home to my apartment after calling the police, and my child was at the resident above me. I was on the first floor, and he said, hey, Mom! And I guess he was glad to see his dad. I guess he was glad to see his dad, for whatever reason. So I eventually left there. I left Oklahoma. I lived up about 5 years. Sadly to say, I got back with him. I did. He kept coming back and forth. He was basically kicked out of town because he got locked up that same day for taking my child without permission and what have you. And he started stalking me again. But he finally left town, but he came back, and he bought a house in my name because an abusive person will try to lure you with gifts when they know they've done bad. So, and that's what he would do. A lot of the times that I receive abuse, I would receive gifts. And probably less than 2 weeks later, the abuse is back. And, of course, that was also emotional and physical and economic because he really never supported me or my children for any substantial time because he wanted me to fail. He did. It was some kind of internalized hatred, I would call it, that he had for me. And maybe it was maybe generalized to women in particular because he was a womanizer. He had many relationships. He at one time was bold enough to tell me that I earned less than any of the women that he had been involved with. I said, yeah, because I'm taking care of your children. But anyway, we had two more children, and the abuse, of course, continued. I moved back to Orlando, and my sister came to visit me from California. And she always wanted to go to Jamaica. So we went to Jamaica. She has a son that's a year older than my son. So he was going to be the babysitter. So we stayed a few days, came back, and they were getting ready to go to the airport. And my nephew said, Auntie Ada, what was that lady name that Uncle Bobby took in your room? Like My nephew was trying to tell me something. He had taken this woman in the room. So after we got back from the airport, what was Edward talking about? What woman was that? He grabbed me and choked me until I almost died. Mm. And if it wasn't for my child screaming, I probably would have died. Of course, God saved me, but my child was screaming because he knew I was stealed, and he saw his dad angry with his hands wrapped around my throat. And so he let go, of course, and I know I had to get out. I know I did, but I stayed, and I worked, and it just got crazy. If he got angry about something else, maybe another relationship, I don't know. I remember one day I stayed from work and he played, I thought, Russian roulette with a gun. I had called for my job. I had friends calling me, Ada, where are you? You didn't come to work today. Where are you? They were very concerned because they knew. And it was just every day. And I tried. There's no help. At this particular time, there were really no laws to protect people, or women especially, from abuse. Because majority women, I think it's well over 23% of women that are abused in their lifetime. That's too high. That's really too high. And it's in the U.S. It may be higher in some other countries where abuse is rampant, you know, like in South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And I went to see counselors. That was another thing I can include that I was trying. I remember we went to counseling, and he went to one session, and he walked out of that session. So I was going by myself. I feel like I needed it. I was going by myself. And yeah. The therapist said, you need to make a decision. You need to get out of this. But I tried. And it's hard to understand because at this time frame, and I'm talking about the 80s and early 90s, it was really difficult. Things did not shift for women being abused until after O.J. Simpson. I can certainly say that when domestic violence, because of Nicole Brown Simpson's brutal death and her friend, it took first page. And that's really what brought it to light, and things started to shift. But by then, I had suffered grievously also at my children. I remember running from daycare centers and the daycare workers hiding me and hiding my child. And again, I have to say, I did get back with them. I did. And they're probably people who, if they knew a fraction of the stuff that I went through, they would, like, what in the world? You lost your mind. And perhaps I did. Mm-hmm. But I just think it is an emotional thing, and it became so normal. Honestly, abuse became so normal. Trying to avoid getting him angry, because I did get some reprieve when he would leave. He would just up and leave. Sometimes he would send me a message like, oh, make sure your car is running good. But it was for his benefit more than mine. And he would leave, and I would be glad he left. Oh, boy, I would be glad. And we had some semblancy. His son from his, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. Don't be sorry. I do want to take a break, though, because I have some questions I want to ask. Go get a drink of water. We're going to take a quick break, and then I have some questions that I want to ask you, if that's
sure,
okay.
Absolutely. Thank you. Okay. It's fine. Thank you.
We're here with Dr. Ada Crosby. We are recognizing Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Dr. Crosby has been, she's a survivor of domestic violence as well as a facilitator in terms of helping people maneuver through their circumstances who have been subjected to domestic violence. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good Friday afternoon, and welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are sharing the story of Dr. Ada Crosby, who is a survivor of domestic violence as well as a facilitator in the community to try to help, I hate to say victims, but I guess victim is one word, and also survivors of domestic violence trying to transition into better lives, as well as working with other people who have a variety of other mental health issues. So Dr. Ada, I have a couple of questions. If you don't want to answer or if you think it's too personal, that's fine. Just let me know. Just say pass. You have how many children with your children's father?
Three.
So did your first child come along before or after you got married? So prior to you having the first child, was there abuse?
Yes, it was. It was probably more mental and emotional than it was physical, but it always graduate and escalate into physical. It's just the normal process. I hate to use the word normal, but if you're an abuser, it's not going away. It's just going to get worse. And I knew that. I had enough coursework and training to know.
Mm-hmm.
But I continued to hide in silence. Working. Mm-hmm. I showed up for work. I showed up with black eyes, as I said earlier. I mm-hmm. showed up with my job at Martin Marietta. I remember one of the engineers rolled over and from his desk, he said, "Come on, Ada." He knew me. He knew Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
That was his name, my children's father. That's not his real name, but he was called Bobby. And he said, "Come on, Ada. Bobby hit you, didn't he?" And I was just busy doing my work. And what could you say?
Mm-hmm.
But the embarrassment again, I didn't do well with that. Because one thing, as an abused person, you almost take on the responsibility as if you caused it. It becomes so normal because you're practicing trying to stay not abused. You're trying to practice saying not being hit, not being disparaged, talked about, because that was part of the control as well. I was always accused of dating other people, never did, always. And, of course, they say what you're accused of is usually what the accuser is doing, and that was certainly the case with him often.
So,
yes.
So, and this is a personal question, but were physical relations with your husband voluntary or were you raped?
I would say, for the most part, voluntary, only because I didn't want problems. I didn't want, but there was a rape. That was a brutal rape. Once when I finally decided that I was going to move out, he wasn't going anywhere. So, because I got tired of calling the police, I got tired of filing for restraint orders that weren't worth the paper they were written on and weren't powerful at all. Couldn't stop a knife, couldn't stop a gun. And the police would come. I remember he slit my tires once because he did. He would move out when he wanted to, but he would come back when he wanted to. And I had gone to a wedding, and he was in one of my dear friends to this day, We do talk, but we're not as close, because what an abused spouse or intimate partner, as they often are called, will do is make sure you don't have any support. And I've never lived around family. I'm from Mississippi, as I said, but my family is spread out all over the United States. But I had no family to this day except for my children in Florida. They like stuff like that. They get worse because of it, because there's no one else pretty much to help hold them accountable. And if they are, they're probably women, because I really didn't have any male friends. I'd gone to a wedding. My dear friend and her husband, Hanif, was in the wedding. And afterwards, I had a cousin to drop me off at home. And Hanif was with a friend. He was at a friend's house, one of his playmates. So I unlocked the door, went in the house, and he was there. He grabbed me by my hair and pulled me to the bedroom. He raped me. Then he calls him on the phone. And that was just insult to injury. And they just got married. He said, "Stay away from my wife." He was angry, and I'll tell you why. He was invited to the wedding because they knew how he was. He was invited, and he was very angry. And he took all his anger out on me. Yes. And I just thank God that my child wasn't there, because it's at a point that he wouldn't care how he acted out. He just wouldn't. He just completely lose control.
Did your children witness any of these incidents?
Yes. And I'll tell you about another incident, which was pretty much what freed me. Hanif witnessed the first one when he was like 3.5 years old, when he choked me. And because of his screaming, I believe he came to reality and let me go. And but as far as I know, they knew there were difficulties. When Hanif was about 13, he asked me. It had truly become less physical, but it was still abuse. The economic part, because he never really contributed to the household, except if he wanted to, you know, because the goal was to destroy me. And he thought that if he could just destroy me, he could just control me more. I don't know. I never understood that. But, yeah, he never did take responsibility. I remember one incident when my youngest son was before he turned 18, I went to file child support. I had already filed. But I went to update my case because he would never be found. That was one time he was on an ankle bracelet for stalking me, because by then the stalking law had come into effect, and he was one of the first individuals in Orange County to be held accountable because of that law. And that, again, came as a result of the O.J. Simpson situation when he was involved in domestic violence with his wife. Mm. But other than that, I didn't answer Hanif when he asked me that. I haven't answered him to this day. I just felt really worthless. Mom, why do you let Dad treat you like that? Yeah. But I would say he's probably the one that's been mostly impacted. I believe my middle son, he's like 7 years younger than Hanif. He's been impacted emotionally, and his was manifest through learning disabilities. Yeah, because after this incident that I'm going to tell you about, that pretty much drew me away from him, in terms of, I would say, the legal system now is supporting women. We're divorced. We've been divorced for a long time. to be honest with you. We've been divorced. I actually was able to buy a house if I was a single person. And that was impetus for me to go ahead and divorce. I mean, I had a reason to. I filed in 5 different states. And I finally divorced him in Florida. I did, Mississippi, California, Texas, where I lived, and maybe Colorado. But I filed. I never finished it, never did. And it's probably because I was running so much from this place to that place. And after I got the divorce, he had an affair. He had an affair. And I caught him because the same friend I told you about earlier, he called me one day. He said, Bobby stopped by and he left this hat with the insignia of a major in the Army. I said, really? Interesting. So I still had a friend in Oklahoma where I had lived, and I worked at Fort Seal installation, even though I was a contractor for Martin Marietta. I called her, and she went and found out who this lady is, and I found her number, and he answers the phone. Yeah. And it just so happened at the same time that his grandfather was dying in New York, and his mother called me. His mother was still living at the time, and she called me. She said, Ada, tell Bobby to call home. His grandfather's dying. And I said to her, he's not here. He's in Texas, and I believe I found out where he is. They did not have a good relationship. So she said, I'd rather you call him. And he didn't. He hated his mother, which is a really good telltale sign in a man if he doesn't have a good relationship with his mother. I found that out the hard way. And I didn't know why, because she seemed like a pretty decent lady. But I guess she had her past that he didn't like, you know. But I called the number again, and she answers. And I say, this is his ex-wife, and his mother needs him to call New York because his grandfather's dying. And yeah, and it was one of those trips where I was just glad he left. Oh, Lord, I'm just glad he left. And it just seemed impossible to get rid of him. It just did. It's like he was entrenched in my life. And it was just deeper than the abuse or fear even. It was just somehow he was so entrenched. So the grandfather died. And the mother called me, and I called the number again, and I reported to this lady who turned out to be a lieutenant colonel in the Army. Mm-hmm. And I said, will you please tell him that his grandfather has died? The next day, he was back in Orlando, and he had all three of us on the couch. He said, I'm going to kill all y'all. I'm going to kill y'all. He just said it like it was nothing. I'm going to kill you. And somehow, Hanif, that's my oldest son, he convinced us that he was going to Desert Storm. I don't know how, but I didn't know the man. I didn't know what he was doing, but he convinced us. So I got a call from his teacher. We're praying for Honey's dad, because he's been sent to Iraq and what have you, and it wasn't Iraq at all. He was probably wearing the identity of this woman. He had married her, in fact. I got the marriage license and everything. Go ahead.
Please. I want to kind of get to a couple things before we end. The boys. I want to find out if they have incorporated any of their father's behavior in their own personalities. Have you had to worry about any of that?
That's a great question. That's a great question, and thank you for asking that. I look for that, and I hate to use the word fear, but I'd say concern. That's been my concern as a parent for many years. I would tell my sons, you must be better than your dad. If you become a father, well, first of all, they say, well, we never having children. And I think that was a sign from the abuse they went through. My youngest son, he suffered too. He did. He suffered in his own way, even though he's a lot younger. And he suffered as a result of going to visit his dad because he didn't know his dad. Because when we finally split, he was about five. He just didn't remember him. He didn't. He was very young, about three. Maybe he was about three. And he went to visit him, and he didn't treat him well. He was had another family. He had a daughter. And my son came back. I would call and check on him, and he always seemed to be asleep. And at maybe hours difference in the time, and I was like, how can he be asleep? So when he came back, my son internalized all his pain and rejection, and he was diagnosed ADHD. He did. And he said, Dad, what? And he starts screaming, Dad would send me to bed with nothing to eat because his sister, who turned out to have some really serious mental health problems, said that he hit her. She had some meanness in her. And they're about 2 years difference in age, I think. And so he would always send him to bed with no food. And, of course, the mother would take her child's side. That was the only child. Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, we got through that. I guess these episodes where he just had to take complete authority over me would capitalize into just staying quiet, going to work, taking care of my children, doing what I can to normalize their life. And back to your question again, I made them write a forgiveness letter to their dad after he did finally leave physically because he was forced out. And I'll tell you the story about that very quickly. I mentioned I had the nerve to start dating many years by myself, doing well, and not wanting to ever again. Maybe that was some fear on my own part. But I met this very wonderful person on my job. He was a vendor. And another aspect about people or individuals who are abusers, if you do have support, they're probably less likely to act out. But if you push their button, it take everybody out. So I never exposed my children to this gentleman. If he came by, they were already asleep. That's one thing I tell single parents. If you're going to date, no overnighters, no this and that. You have the respect for your children. And I did it because I didn't want them to come attached to this guy. I didn't know if the relationship was going to work out. So why am I going to introduce them to someone else? But anyway, he said, I want to meet your children's father and let him know that, you know, I like him. I love him, you know. Basically, I love who you love. No, he didn't want that. So I let it go. Now, he's living with a woman who's probably 25 years old, and he's in his late 40s at this time, So why should he care about what I'm doing? No. And that's the surprising part. The control is still there. And he probably didn't like the fact that I had the nerve to date while he was living with a woman. So he would call me at work, threaten me, and say this and say that, and tell that so-and-so. I started to drive my car through the house. And he didn't, of course. And then he would talk about him, and I said, well, you know, he would like to meet you. I was still trying to be as sensible as I can with a crazy guy because I felt good. I was glad he had a woman because when he has somebody, he doesn't bother me as much.
Yeah.
And that went on even after he moved out of town because he would make periodic checks on me and as if he knew I was still alone and not married, and he would just, you know, make innuendos. Oh, I'll be coming through that way. Can I spend the night? I'll sleep on the couch. I just want to visit with the boys. No. So long story short again, I noticed that he just became too involved in me, interest in the relationship that I had, but didn't seem amenable to meeting the gentleman or whatever. So, but he didn't care. Let's be honest here. He didn't care about these children. He didn't care about me. He didn't care about them. And they couldn't feel the love from somebody who treated them so harshly.
Yeah.
So he came by one morning. I don't know why. He's probably stalking me. And he rings the doorbell. And I just hung up. I don't know why this person called me, but I just hung up. And he comes in. Who was that on the phone? So he's star 69, I think is the number, and he heard his voice and hung up, and he told me, and he looked at me with evil in his eyes. He said, I'm going to kill you. He came back, and he tried to make good on that, and he disconnected the phone from the outside. I was downtown getting a restraining order. I had several outstanding, because at that time, in order to have it validated, you have to serve the person. You have to call the police, have them serve the paper, which to me is crazy now. No wonder so many women got killed or died as a result of, from the abuser. So they wouldn't give me another one. She said, you need to go talk to the judge. So I went to the judge chambers late. I left work early. And a friend had to tell me to leave because I shared with her what he had told me that morning. And she said, Ada, leave. Go to the courthouse. Not knowing that this wouldn't help me, and I knew it wouldn't, but I went anyway, and I went and spoke with the judge. He wasn't there. He was in his office. So I spoke with the legal assistant because she wanted to know what was wrong. So I gave her a tidbit of what I had experienced and what had been occurred over the years. And next thing I know, this judge came out of his chamber, sat down beside me. He said, what can I help you with? He said, no one should go through what you go through. I don't recall his name, but I remember the situation vividly. He gave it to me. I went home. I made calls. Hanif was my oldest son. Is my babysitter. I think he's around 15. So he's watching his two younger brothers. And so I'm getting groceries. I stop at a grocery store. I'm calling. You guys okay? No sign of the dad. And so I asked, I called the third time. I called three times. I didn't get an answer. And then when I got home, I saw him on the corner, like he'd been pacing, and I didn't know the phone was unplugged. But I got in the house, taking the groceries out of the car. He said some very ugly, disparaging things to me. And I have my younger son with me who's kind of clinging to me, sitting down on the couch, and he pushes me. And a voice in my head said, run. It was very clear, run. And then Hanif was pacing, and he said, get out of here. So I didn't know that he had gone in the drawer, pulled out a knife, stuck it down the nape of his back, and pulled his shirt over. But Hanif saw him. So when that voice said, run, I ran through my kitchen, pressed the garage door opener. It took forever to get through. I screamed at Hanif because I know he was coming behind me. I said, what does he have? I didn't know if he had a gun or a knife. And it wasn't a knife. Hanif took the knife, and he saved me from that encounter. And then he comes driving his car past the where he was parked in the cul-de-sac. Yeah. So
Ada, I'm so sorry you've got to
go.
But thank you for sharing your story. We're probably going to have to bring you back another time because I really want to get some insight from you to share with some other folks in terms of how they should handle their own situations and lessons that you learned that you're applying and that you're using to help others. So
absolutely.
Thank you again. Yeah. I really appreciate
you're very welcome. And I also want to come back and just share about the nonprofit that I put together, founder, CEO of. It's called Jody and Matthew Rivera Domestic Violence Education Consortium, Inc. And they're the two victims that were killed. Jody was like a mother to my sons, and she's no longer here, and her husband also killed the youngest son. Yes, I'd like
Ada,
to come back and share
so
the story.
We will
thank
have
you
back
much.
For sure.
You're welcome. Take
thank
care.
You.
I hope
and thank
that
you
I'm
all
here.
For listening. Have a blessed weekend.
Thank
this
you.
Has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. Be well, be safe, be blessed, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care of yourself.
Your mouth. Come on. You gotta say something.